Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green. Our building is located at 125 Hilltopper Avenue, and we encourage you to come and meet with us. We have Bible classes available for different age groups at 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings and 7 o'clock on Wednesday evenings. So that's times for our Bible classes. Now on Sundays, we meet then together at 10 o'clock in the auditorium and at 6 o'clock on Sunday evenings for our worship services. We encourage you to come and take part in those. And if you have any questions about anything that you see done or anything you hear said that you don't agree with, or perhaps that maybe just intrigues you a little and you would like to talk about that more, study it more, that's what we do. That we would be delighted to sit down with you with open Bibles and open minds and examine that topic. Or if there's some other Bible topic that you would like to study, we try to make ourselves available for that purpose anytime. We'll make sure there's a convenient, comfortable place for us to be able to meet, conditions and circumstances be right, and we will be happy to open our Bibles with you and consider what God has to say on whatever topic you would like to study. You know, I've noticed that a lot of times when you have people who go out and are engaged in teaching or door knocking programs, it's a program. And there's some agenda there. They maybe have certain talking points, and they can't stray from that. And I always enjoy it when people come and knock on my door and want to talk about the Bible, but we might need to talk about other things. We might need to talk about other issues than what maybe they want to talk about. Well, because of that, through the years, I have learned that I think it's better to address the needs of those who want to consider what the Bible says. So keep that in mind. We'll be very open about that. Back some weeks ago, I had planned on doing some lessons on marriage and the marriage bond in the pulpit. And one of these lessons, the more maybe technical aspect of it, I thought actually would be good to do on the radio. And because I've not done it on the radio in a long time, so I'm going to do this today with reference to the marriage bond. That is a misunderstood subject. Marriage is a misunderstood subject. I mean, ever since the Supreme Court authorized gay marriage, obviously we have some problems out there in our culture today understanding what marriage is. What is the purpose of marriage? What is the makeup of marriage? What does the Bible have to say about this? What does the Bible say about marriage and the marriage bond? Well, the Bible teaches that marriage is more than a mere physical relationship. You know, we hear today of people marrying objects or marrying their pets and things of that nature. That's not what the Bible teaches about marriage. In marriage, in a scriptural marriage, in a God-ordained marriage, God binds. He does the binding. He binds an eligible man and an eligible woman in marriage. Paul talks about this in Romans chapter 7, verses 2 and 3. For the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. But if the husband dies, she is released from the law of her husband. So then, if while her husband lives, she marries another man, she will be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she has married another man. So I want you to think about what we just read from Romans 7, 2 and 3. Now, granted, the verses that I read here sandwiched between two other verses where it is clear from the context that Paul is primarily talking about a man's relationship, particularly a Jew. The Gentiles were never under the law of Moses. It was given to the Jews, we're told in the Old Testament. Moses said to us, we who are alive here today, as he addressed them at Mount Horeb, And so, obviously, that's the context here in Romans 7. But when you consider that, then what was Paul's point? Well, upon what basis would a Jew have the right to be married to Christ, to be joined to Christ, or to be bound to Christ? Well, only if they were released from the law that they were already under. They had to be released from the law of Moses, and it would constitute spiritual adultery for them to be under both. But they had died to the law, and the reason he's able to say that is because the law had died. The law of Moses had been nailed to the cross. It had been replaced with what we call the new covenant. So the old covenant is no longer in force, and we're under the new covenant. So he uses the marriage relationship between a man and a woman to illustrate how this works, because people, the Jewish people, would have been able to relate to that concept. And what is it? Well, that God's law, and we can say God. I had a guy one time, a preacher, challenged me on when I kept saying that God does the binding. Well, God does the binding. He does the binding based upon his witnessing of the vows. We'll be getting into that here directly. God does the binding. Now, is it God's law? Well, yes, that's because the only way we know about any of this, God didn't whisper in some small, still voice to some one of us and say, hey, when two eligible people make wedding vows, they leave their father and mother and cleave to one another, then I bind them in marriage. He didn't tell us that individually and personally. He told us that through his law. We know that through his law. And the law on marriage is very old. It goes all the way, runs all the way from Genesis chapter 2 up through our time today, because Jesus said that it was still law. When he quoted Adam, therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Jesus added to that, added to Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24. He added to that, what therefore God has joined together, let not man sunder, or put asunder, or let him separate. So Jesus said there was embedded in the Abrahamic law, the Adamic law, regarding the man and the woman, embedded in that, implied in that, was that God did some binding. God did some putting together. So that's that principle as well in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 6, as Jesus, of course, was addressing Genesis 2:24, and the original law governing marriage. So, the point is pretty simple here. The woman is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. Now, Paul needed the other point, didn't he? He needed the point about the husband dying, because he goes on to point out that they had become dead to the law, that they might be joined or married to Christ in verse 4. But as far as the original marriage aspect of it, the physical marriage between a man and a woman, Paul's point is also a standalone point. It has to do with God's binding of a couple in marriage. God basically holds a man, an eligible man, an eligible woman, to their vows, the vows they make to one another. Matthew 19:4 and 5 talk about this. The Pharisees, of course, had approached Jesus and asked him about putting away. Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for just any cause? And Jesus said, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Jesus added, what therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. So what is he talking about? Well, a man leaves father and mother. So here's an open declaration of some sort. An open declaration. They make this announcement. The ceremony may be either very, very brief and very simple, or the process, you might say. We sometimes refer to it as a ceremony. It may be very simple, it may be very brief, or it may be very extravagant. It may be very large, involving a lot of people. It may be very small, involving only a few. That's irrelevant. The thing that matters is this declaration of intent. The man and the woman, they leave father and mother. They cleave, they join to one another. What does that represent? Well, that's talking about the vows that are made. And then it goes on and says, become one flesh. What is that talking about? That's talking about the sexual. That's a term referring to sexual relations that are now authorized on the basis of the leaving and cleaving parts. On the part of those who have openly declared and have exchanged their vows to one another, to be joined to one another, and now they have a right. They have a right to become one flesh, and that's a part of the marriage relationship. And I always like to point out, because this has been a little bit controversial over the years, that we know that's a part of that because of the discussion that followed there in Matthew 19 about the disciples when they said, you know, if this is the case with man, then it's good not to marry. And Jesus wanted to explain to them, some actually cannot receive it. Some actually cannot become married. And who would that be? Well, he talks about those who were unable to engage in sexual relations. He talks about eunuchs, and regardless of what brought about them being a eunuch, whether they were born that way or from their mother's womb or made eunuchs of men or made eunuchs of themselves, he said only those who are able to receive it can receive it. And what else do we know about this? Well, we know 1 Corinthians chapter 6. This, when I say this, I mean this matter of one flesh. We know from 1 Corinthians chapter 6 where Paul is talking about unlawful sexual relations. Though they are unlawful, and at verse 15 makes that clear, shall I then take members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? God forbid. And then verse 16 is very, very helpful on this. What? Know ye not that he which is joined to a harlot is one body, for two, saith he, shall be one flesh. So what happens in a case of sexual immorality like that, a case of a man being with a prostitute? And I believe here he's referring to religious prostitution practiced by the pagans, and that the Corinthians cannot any longer be a part of that, obviously. And that was a cultural thing for them in Corinth. But anyway, in verse 16, Paul talks about it. And he said it's called one flesh. But he said it's unauthorized one flesh. He calls it fornication. Two verses later, flee fornication. So one flesh can be either right, as it is in marriage, or it can be wrong, as it is in sexual immorality called fornication. But we do learn something about the expression one flesh, don't we? And today what happens? How different is it today? It is very different today in that you have people just what we call shacking up, living together outside of marriage, away from marriage, and joining together sexually in unauthorized sexual relations. I always thought it was very simple what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 7:2, where he told the Corinthians in order to avoid fornication. Keep in mind, this is only one, it's only a few verses later from where we just read in chapter 6 just a couple of minutes ago. That in chapter 7 in verse 2 he said, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and every wife have her own husband. That's how fornication, sexual immorality, is avoided. Marriage should be encouraged. Marriage should be encouraged. Now, marriage must be respected. In other words, if we're talking to, let's say, a young couple who's thinking about becoming married, they need to understand this bond factor when it comes to marriage. They need to understand that they're making a lifetime commitment when they exchange those vows. Otherwise, this can be absolute tragedy. We know too many people who have married, then what we would describe as unscripturally divorced, we'll get into that here in a little bit, and now have no right to marry again. They have no right to marry. Paul said that the death of a bound mate frees one to marry. But friends, that can take a long time. This is a serious matter. Somebody says, well, you know, I'll just go ahead and marry even though I don't know if this is going to work out. And, you know, and if it doesn't work out, we'll just get divorced. And then if my spouse dies, Paul said that I can remarry. Well, that might take another 60, 70. You know, we just saw the death of Jimmy Carter, former president Jimmy Carter, lived to be 100 years old. That might be 80 years later for you if you're 20 years old. No, that's not the proper attitude when it comes to marriage. We need to remember this binding that God does. And how does that happen? You have an eligible man and an eligible woman. That is, these are people who are not bound to someone else in marriage. They have a right to marry. They've never married before, maybe. Or maybe it's someone who was married and their spouse died. We've already talked about that. Or maybe it was someone who was married, but their spouse was unfaithful, sexually unfaithful to them, Matthew 19:9. And so now they have the right to put them away and marry another. Matthew 19:9. Could be that. That it has to be eligible. I'll go over those things again later. But the binding is what God sees. Jesus said, what therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. You know, the Old Testament uses another word for bond that I think is helpful. In the Old Testament, you see sometimes where the marriage covenant, where the marriage bond is called the covenant. The covenant. And that's because it represents the same idea. It is a binding based upon vows, upon mutual commitment, mutual vows to one another. When the wise man spoke of the unfaithful woman in Proverbs 2 and verse 17, he said that she forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. On one level, he's just her companion as a marriage partner, right? They are companions, intimate companions. On another level, there is the bond with God. The binding that God has placed upon them, binding them exclusively to one another, which is why it says she forgets the covenant of her God by her infidelity. It's very simple, friends. Now, it's simple to understand what the Bible teaches. It's simple teaching, I should say. It's easy to understand. It is hard for many people to accept. And it becomes harder to accept when your daughter or your son or your mom or your dad or somebody, one of your friends, gets themselves involved in an unlawful divorce. Where these promises that are made, the vows that are exchanged, are ignored, and people violate their marriage bond. And that's when it becomes hard for people. Malachi 2, so Proverbs 2:17 speaks to it. And Malachi chapter 2 and verse 14 speaks to it. Malachi said, to the Jews, he said, you say, why does he not? That is, why does God not accept our sacrifices? Well, now what, don't you think about the seriousness of it? This has been a fellowship breach. Why does God not accept their sacrifices? Because the Lord, he says, here's the answer. The Lord was witness between you and the wife of your youth, to whom you have been faithless, though she is your companion and your wife by covenant. So, is it companionship Yes, we noticed that in Proverbs 2:17. That's what you, you know, that's what you see first in the first aspect of Genesis chapter 2. Genesis, if you go all the way back to Genesis 2:18, and you see that man had named all the animals, but among the animals was no help made suitable for him. And so God performed the procedure and made the woman from Adam's rib, and she was flesh of flesh and bone of bones. She should be called woman because she was taken out of man. And then I quoted the rest of that a minute ago about a man leaving his father and mother and cleaving to his wife, and they be one flesh. So that's that. And notice that even in Genesis 2, you have both aspects of it. You have the companionship, the helpmeet, the helpmate, the helpmate aspect of it, and then you have the bound aspect of it. Now, why did I say that? Because Jesus said that Genesis 2:24 implied that it implied a binding by God. What therefore God has joined together, that's the bond. Let not man put asunder. And sometimes you'll see examples in Scripture, and these passages are often misused, but I'll try to explain what they mean, where you have an example of a marriage bond remaining intact regardless of the physical marriage relationship. And these verses are somewhat self-explanatory, but I want to go over a few verses with you on that. It's important that we learn what is involved in this. Like in 1 Corinthians 7 in verses 10 and 11, Paul said, "Now to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, a wife is not to depart from her husband." Wife not to depart from husband. That's because they are joined in marriage. "But even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband." And a husband is not to divorce his wife. So even if for some reason persecution might be involved in this, whatever the reason might be that she might have ended up leaving her husband, he is still her bound mate. He is still bound to her. She is still bound to him. The only exception to that would be if she left him because he had committed sexual immorality, but that would invoke another passage. That would invoke Matthew 19:9. In this context, Paul's talking about something different, but the point remains that the woman of this scenario, though unmarried from her husband, she has left him physically. The physical relationship is broken. The bond is still there. She is still bound to her husband. The phrase, her husband, is the same in the Romans 7:2 passage that we talked about earlier. Here's another example of this. Very clear. This proves that the marriage bond can remain intact regardless of the status of the physical marriage relationship. Mark chapter 6, verses 17 and 18. "For Herod himself had sent and laid hold on John, and bound him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, for he, that is Herod, had married her. Because John had said to Herod, 'It is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife.'" Now, how do you break this down? Well, Herodias was the actual wife of Philip. She was maritally bound to Philip. But Herod had married her, though she's still bound to Philip. And this passage addresses both aspects of that, showing that you can be bound to one person. God's still holding you accountable and responsible to the one person while being married to another one, a different one. This passage is very clear on this. Herodias was married to Herod, but she was still bound to Philip. She is still called his wife. You know, sadly, friends, how many times does this happen today? two people marry, they divorce for just basically any reason, Matthew 19:3, just any reason, like the Pharisees wanted to be able to do. They divorce unscripturally, unlawfully. Then one or both of them remarry. They marry other people. And in that situation, they're still bound to each other. They may be married to other people, but Paul in Romans 7:2-3, did you notice that? Said, she shall be called an adulteress if she marries another man while her husband lives. So back to that passage. It's called adultery. Adultery is an ongoing sexual relationship, unlawful sexual relationship. So that marriage needs to be, repentance would involve the dissolution of that marriage. I've encouraged people before, go back to your original mate. If it's possible, while there's still time, fix that. Go back to your real mate. And you know, sometimes that happens, and we hear stories of it sometimes happening. Not nearly often enough. Matthew 19:9 does this same thing. From this passage, it's clear that the marriage, physical marriage relationship is one thing. The bond is something in addition to that. In a lawful marriage, people are bound to one another. They are bound. God holds them responsible for their and to their vows. Matthew 19:9 says, and I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except it be for fornication, and marries another, commits adultery. And whoever marries her that is so put away, commits adultery. That is, put away in a situation where there's no adultery. Because he talks about the fornication as the exception here. It's the exception. So what happens if there is no fornication involved in this at all? Well, you've got a man divorcing his wife, not for fornication, and marrying another, and they commit adultery upon remarriage. And then, because there's no fornication, you also have another possibility here, that whoever marries her that is put away commits adultery. Now, of course, part A of that has to factor into all of it. What about a situation where a man commits fornication and divorces his wife, his lawful wife who is still keeping her marriage vows that we've been talking about in these other verses, that are that an act that is so utterly important? Well, then he's the one guilty of fornication. She has the right to put him away. He doesn't have any scriptural right to put her away. He has no God-given right to do that. He may do it. He may get a lawyer. A judge may say divorce granted and all of that stuff. He may fill out the paperwork. That's irrelevant. The law of God supersedes any laws of men. The law of God supersedes the law of men on marriage as it does on other things where there are contradictions. So the question is whether or not one was sexually immoral. And if they were, the innocent spouse in that case, the vow keeper, the covenant keeper, you know, Romans 1 talks about covenant breakers. Romans 1:31, if I remember. Well, what about the covenant keeper? The covenant keeper, the innocent spouse, has the God-given right to repudiate the fornicating mate and actually reserves the right to marry another upon so doing. So, what do we have here? Well, we have a man commits adultery upon remarriage if he divorces or repudiates his mate, not for fornication, but it says, and marries another. Marriage is one thing. The bond is something in addition to that, separate from that. So what we want is marriages that are bindings. That's the scriptural marriage. Unscriptural or unlawful marriages are where you have marriages, but one of the spouses is actually bound to someone else. Bound's already bound to someone else. Time is up this morning. A few more things to say on that. Well, thank you for listening. Hope you'll tune in next week for another study from God's Word. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.